Welcome back, episode 158. Am I correct?
You are.
Okay, episode 158. So, Joe, some interesting developments, positive signs on the legal front. Cuomo de Blasio, a judge, declared they were wrong to limit worship services and condone mass protests. As a federal judge, New York governor coronavirus orders unfairly targeted houses of worship, federal judge says. A federal judge said New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Attorney General Letitia James, and New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio exceeded their executive limits by limiting worship services and condoning mass protests as the state continues to reopen from coronavirus restrictions. U.S. District Judge Gary L. Sharp issued a preliminary injunction Friday on behalf of the two Catholic priests, Stephen Seuss and Nicholas Stamos, and a trio of Orthodox Jewish congregants represented by the Thomas More Society. Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio could have just as easily discouraged protests, short of condemning their message in the name of public health, and exercised discretion to suspend enforcement of public safety reasons instead of encouraging what they knew was a flagrant disregard of the outdoor limits and social distancing rules, the judge added. They could have been silent, but by acting as they did, Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio sent a clear message that mass protests are deserving a preferential treatment. What he's referring to is we kind of, when the Black Lives Matter protests started in the wake of the George Floyd incident, these riots, these protests they call riots, they call protests, and they kind of morphed into sort of this broad sort of anti-white, anti-Western protest that we're seeing now. We were told that we must those must be permitted because racism was a more dangerous virus than the coronavirus, supposedly. Well, okay, fine. Makes no sense, but okay, fine. I think in New York there was one of the a Black Lives Matter protest that the governor showed up, didn't maintain social distancing, didn't have a mask on. He also permitted a rally of several thousand men. It was a gay pride rally where clearly social distancing wasn't being observed. That doesn't happen too often, a gay pride march. But anyway, to me, the best example of the sort of satanic inversion is where normal church services, worship services, are declared a threat to public health, but a gay pride marches aren't. You know, they're okay. Anyway, New York City Mayor de Blasio, the New York Governor Andrew Cuomo were sued by Catholic priests and Orthodox Jewish congregants for using the coronavirus restrictions to discriminate against people of faith. Thomas More Society Special Counsel Christopher Farrar celebrated this decision and called Cuomo's executive orders a sham that went right out the window as soon as he and Mayor de Blasio saw a mass protest movement they favored taking to the streets by the thousands. So apparently, if you're the right politics, the virus doesn't affect you. If you're the wrong politics, then you can get sick. So at least the judge, I think, came down, his decision was correct there. There was a story, I saw this in USA Today, not just Confederate statues, indigenous activists want conquistadors and missionaries removed. As Confederate statues and symbols are removed nationwide, activists are calling for monuments to those who contributed to the genocide of indigenous people to be toppled as well. It is an act of violence even to have the statues in our homelands, said Elena Ortiz, chair of the Santa Fe Freedom Council of the Red Nation, a social justice organization. It's not just a statue, but it's what it represented, the celebration of our genocide. The conquistadors brought with them not only these weapons of mass destruction, but also the imposition of the Catholic Church and the imposition of a patriarchal government on a peaceful matrilineal societies. Those colonially imposed systems exist to this day and have impacted generations. I don't know what she means by peaceful matrilineal societies. Maybe the Aztecs?
Yeah.
And her name is Ortiz, which is Spanish, which I thought was funny. And of course, it's the city of Santa Fe, you know, and she calls it our homelands. So you see these people are looking to disintegrate the country through their activism. But again, this what started out as sort of a Black Lives Matter, a protest supposedly against white racism, against blacks, police brutality, has now morphed into a broad anti-white, anti-Western heritage pogrom, if you will, to kind of erase a heritage America, sweep away its historical culture. And that's where these protests are leading. And it started with Confederates, then started with, figures from the colonial period, the revolution period, like Jefferson, Washington, and these. Then as the mob went crazy, they started like just defacing any statue that appeared to show a white man, I suppose. Albert Pike was taken down in D.C. Abraham Lincoln's statues were defaced. U.S. Grant's and Lee's statues were defaced and destroyed. So that's where it's gone with that. So that's where we are as we head into the 4th of July weekend to celebrate American independence.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it? The 4th of July would be the tagline to all of the hate whitey process that we've been involved in. I just wanted to interject that. When do you think they will start to focus on AIPAC and the Israeli lobby in the United States, which is conducting an ongoing genocide as we speak against the Palestinians? I mean, the Palestinians are dark-skinned in many cases, they are being subjected to inhuman genocidal conditions. Clearly, our government and the Israeli lobbies inside the United States are basically orchestrating this. When do you think Black Lives Matter will get around to taking up that cause, Tim?
Well, I don't think there's a group called Swarthy Lives Matter.
Oh, dear.
So they're not dark enough. They got to be darker. And they also, they have to, whatever grievance that powers that be can exploit, there has to be ones that can be used to further their interests, the Jewish interests. It's interesting, I was discussing the situation in St. Louis, and there in St. Louis again you have a DA who was Soros funded, a black lady who again is failing to enforce the law. In fact they threatened to prosecute people for defending their property. The statue of St. Louis was defaced. And this is Louis IX, the only king who is a saint. And why is he being attacked? I mean, this is St. Louis. That's what it's named, city's named after. St. Louis IX never owned any slaves. But he did burn the Talmud.
Yes, did that. He did that.
So I don't know if that's just, they were kind of directed in that way because of that.
They have long
memory. So
yeah, the spearhead was a Jewish guy, and he actually had what he described as anti-Semitic behavior by Lewis as the basis for evaporating him from history, for renaming the city, by the way.
So St. Louis should be renamed. The statue should be taken down.
Yep.
Another Catholic saint. Statue should be torn down because of the 13th century burning of the Talmud. Of course, he didn't get into the particulars of the Talmud and why it was Talmud. But ironically, I mean, now when it comes to the Talmud, the Jews are against censorship. But when it comes to, I don't know, the books of E. Michael Jones, they're all for censorship. Yeah.
Well, it's what you call a double standard.
Yeah. They're great at that. That's for sure. It's Herbert Marcuse called it, repressive tolerance.
Yeah, the repressive tolerance, basically means there are no moral issues when you're attacking someone that I don't like. Me being Herbert Marcuse.
Yeah, like free speech can be used to deconstruct society, tear down institutions. Constant critiquing.
Yeah,
but it can't be used to defend it or to build it back up or to wage counter revolution. Free speech can be used to wage revolution, but it can't be used to wage counter revolution.
Yeah, I mean the whole thing is just sophistry, really. I mean, now it's really exposed because the white ethnicity, the Gentile ethnicity, is on the chopping block, and every single kind of moral adage that was used to defend, you know, minorities is nowhere in sight when it comes to the white supremacists, is it? You know, they are, their culture is basically, you know, abhorrent and has to be destroyed. I mean, it's quite interesting when you look at like St. Louis, the individual, right? And you remember the ways that African Americans attempted to get people in their history to be inserted into books, right? Mm-hmm. And how the awareness of kind of the historical personages, how important it was to the self-esteem of the students and things. Boy, I haven't heard anybody defend you know, any of the white statues that have been torn down. Black Lives Matter just seems to have a monolithic, you know, moral control where, you know, the whites are basically without any, even the capacity to defend themselves verbally.
No, well, they're corporate funded. They're foundation and corporate funded. And
yeah. Yeah, when you look at all the corporate sponsorship of Black Lives Matter, Coca-Cola, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for this organization, you can really see how organized it all is. You know, this wasn't some kind of, you know, historical moment that unfolded spontaneously. I mean, the lockdown leading to the attack against white ethnicity, Gentiles, couldn't be circumstance. I mean, these are precisely timed events that are being executed with the idea, you know, we were talking before the show started, and I was saying that really what they want to do is to maneuver Gentiles into the lowest tier in the society. It isn't going to be an egalitarian society. It's going to be one where there will be, you know, structure, and the lowest tier will be what was the white middle class. And then from there, they will try to evaporate, and surely they will have no trouble doing it because of all the other things that are going on, you know, with basically just breed them out of existence and with other groups and whatnot. So it's, you know, we mentioned last week, this is an operation. I don't think anyone who's clear-minded can dispute it.
No, no, you have to see it in the context of Agenda 21, Agenda 2030,
yeah. Yeah.
And the great economic reset, or great global economic reset that the World Economic Forum is planning. In fact, that's the theme of their next meeting in January. If you just look at the right, was it Klaus Schwab? This guy wrote a book about this, and what they plan to do with resetting or configuring the entire economy, getting rid of the consumer economy, bringing on AI, and doing away with legacy systems. That would be like small mid-sized businesses, personally owned automobiles, and so they're planning a great social engineering economic reset that it requires. And of course, to do this ambitious plan, you couldn't do it legislatively. You couldn't do it. And they weren't getting anywhere with the environmental stuff, so they had to unleash this operation, which was the fake pandemic. And then as that wound down, that did a number on the economy. The businesses that had survived this were allowed to gradually reopen, and then all of a sudden their shops are being looted, and law and order has collapsed. And
yep. Well said. Well, you know. Well said. I really like the point that they could never have done this through a democratic process. So it had to be done under some kind of emergency, you know, mandate. And that's why when you see the governors taking just arbitrary actions, right, which are basically completely unconstitutional, This is being done to prepare us for, you know, the future steps, which will also be under the auspice of an emergency of some kind. And that will not have any kind of democratic participation at all, because, I mean, what you described was a slave state in which all activity will be monitored. Everything.
Yes.
It's all going to be monitored. You said they're getting rid of the legacy systems. I know that's their phrase. And I thought you were being ironic when you use it. because, as you well know, what they're talking about is getting rid of things which human freedom produced, like taking a car for a drive in the countryside by yourself, or deciding to go to a restaurant, or paying for something with cash. I mean, all of these little aspects of your freedom will be gone in the new system. You will be monitored tip to stern. And of course, I don't know if you saw it, but they brought out a report saying that IQ had dramatically lowered in the last like 30 years. We talked about this many times where, you know, we'd bring up the point that the autistic, who in New Jersey now are, there are statistics showing it's 1 in 20 are children are being killed. Okay. Well, you can't do that much damage to the entire genetic bell curve without having everything shift to the left. And that's what's going on. So you're having fewer, the more autistic kids you're having would equate on the other side of the bell curve to be a reduction of brilliant kids. And so now the whole curve is shifting to the epsilon and delta class that they're creating. And of course, at the same time, the technological control and observation are being implemented so that the deltas and epsilons will be monitored. And of course, the drugs will be there to, you know, in case there's any kind of thing like anger or some desire for freedom. I mean, this will all be administered through chemicals.
Yeah, through diet, injections, and injunctions, right?
Yep.
And that's, I think, Bertrand Russell's line, but that's what they've done. Of course, we're seeing that today with the modification of the food supply, the disruption of the food supply, and also the the rolling out of this they call it a vaccine, but it really isn't even a vaccine. It's an injection of some sort of gene modification, gene therapy. And of course, what they'll do is, it won't be overtly mandatory, but they'll make any participation in the economy, make it a requirement to be able to basically walk out of your house, because that's what they've done with these mask requirements and these things. It's an affront to bodily autonomy. It's not just a reasonable compromise. Not only is it stupid, it's an assault to everyone's intelligence, but it's also an assault on bodily autonomy. It's the idea that everywhere you go, you're a bio threat, that you can't congregate and meet. I mean, just that basic argument means that they can regulate the most intimate of human relationships. It's ridiculous. It's on its face, it's absurd, yet they're making that argument. And yeah, I go back to what I was talking about earlier about this court ruling up in New York regarding the governor of New York and the mayor of New York. Is they overstepped their authority. But what they did was such an egregious overstep in authority. It's a violation of their oath of office. And it shouldn't be like, oh, you just made an honest mistake. For that violation, they should be impeached, removed from office, and then also suffer criminal prosecution for this. But you need the political will to do this. You know, my point is, the other side of this, even if we do prevail or prevent it, we can't be feckless. And there needs to be serious consequences, personal consequences for what these people are doing.
Absolutely. I mean, they should be arrested.
Yes.
If there was a functioning political reality that was in any way democratic, the first thing it would do would be to go and arrest de Blasio and Gavin Newsom. Mm-hmm. because what they're doing, as you said, isn't just illegal, but it's absurd. It's the medical advantages, the so-called science, is just laughable. I mean, here in California, they are closing the LA beaches on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Now, the beaches on the adjacent counties are not closed. For example, where I live, Santa Barbara, which is about an hour drive from LA, they're anticipating like several hundred thousand Los Angelinos who will simply show up and pack our beaches. So instead of having the people in Los Angeles spread out along the, 40 miles of beaches that they could access, they're all going to be jammed into ours, cheek by jowl. And there is simply no way if the idea of like maintaining social distance was the goal, that this would even be an idea that would come up. What they're doing is they're first of all, they're creating slave training, right? Because they're saying, no, no, you can't go to this beach. And then they're going to pack in the people trying to get away from the inland heat into these beaches so that then they can later on say, well, we've had a spike in the coronavirus because everyone forgot to social distance. We're going to have more draconian measures now going forward so people cannot be permitted to congregate.
It'll be these the test results that they cite. I saw a headline, hundreds possibly infected by coronavirus at a bar. What? What? What does infected mean anyway? It means you have a coronavirus, which everyone has. And this is the type of nonsense you're hearing. You're reading in the headlines, and it's being reported in the media. And I don't know if it's me, but how many people actually watch the news and read these headlines or give it any credence or any credibility anymore?
It's just so. Yeah, that's a really good question. They continue to pour out the moronic propaganda. So you presume that someone's paying attention. And I know that it is working because I know so many people that I contact with that are absolutely terrified. They are that whatever the government tells them about the horror of COVID, they just believe. I talked recently, 2 days ago, to a couple. They had been basically sheltering in place without leaving their home for 4 months. And it's just beyond belief. I said, gee, did you ever think about like maybe leaving and going out? No, we were just that frightened. So there is a large fraction of the population of the United States that simply believes everything that the media tells them. They just do. I mean, it's the only way you can explain that you can even pull off something like this is that fact exists. And going forward, we are going to enter into a kind of a starvation mode here at some point. You can't really reduce the economy as far down as we have and not have really significant shortages in everything going forward. We're certainly going to have shortages in food. And then you have to wonder what these people are going to think when the reality that they will be experiencing will be 100 times worse than anything that the virus could have delivered to them.
Yeah. And they essentially did it to themselves.
Of course.
Despite they did complying. It to themselves. Yeah. And that's, I guess, that's sort of that karma thing where, they need our consent, and they effectively got our consent. And just like with the beaches, you would think that the Los Angelinos would just pour onto the beaches and say, screw you to the authorities. This is ridiculous. That's what you'd like to see.
I am hoping that happens. I doubt it very much, but it's possible because in Santa Cruz, north of us, they attempted to lock the beaches down through the 4th of July weekend, and then the government simply announced that they couldn't do it because they said that the public refused to be governed. That was how they expressed it. They said, we just, they were trying to get people off the beach, and they would have 10 people, they would push off the beach, and there'd be 100 coming in the other side. So they just gave up on it. If that happened in Los Angeles, that would be a great event. I mean, that would be, hopefully, would be the beginning of some kind of organized resistance. But I will say that, you mentioned the legal verdict. That's very, very important because what it will mean is there will be a stiffened backbone by the Catholics if there is a second attempt at a lockdown. Mm-hmm. Because this time they will remember this legal decision and they will that hopefully.
Well, the whole, this whole absurdity when the protest started over George Floyd supposedly, and we were told that this must be permitted. And we had scientists and health experts saying that it was okay because they were protesting over a civil rights issue, as if that changed any reality regarding the virus, But then we're told that if you're protesting the lockdowns, that is bad because that way it will be one of these super spreader events. I love these terms, super spreader events. Donald Trump's political rally is a super spreader event, but a George Floyd protest is an essential act of civic act because you're opposing white supremacy or racism. That's just absurd because it doesn't change reality. I mean, really, what it is, it's almost like the cognitive dissonance there is designed to get the thinking part of the public just to go crazy at that point. So what does make any sense? I mean,
then this is a psychological maneuver. And so when you hear de Blasio say that, you know, being very sarcastic when he's explaining to the Catholics that they want to attend church service because the BLM protests were basically not social distancing. And he said, you know, the idea that you would equate, you know, your desire to go to church with a nation wrestling with 400 years of racism is just preposterous and selfish and childish. In other words, just language of intimidation. I mean, so this was the psychological, you know, revolution where he was telling the Christians, white Christians, that you are inferior. Your needs and desires are not politically maintained. This new group, this which just emerged overnight, basically, this will have the stature of what, you know, was the white middle class, who had political power, not, Tim, just because of white supremacy, but because, well, they were the majority.
Yeah.
Right. So this was one of the basises of the so-called white supremacy, was that, well, in a democracy, if you're the majority, you will tend to basically represent your own interests first and foremost.
Yes.
But now, even though the Gentiles are still a majority, they're being basically told, no, you're without any kind of political power. I don't know if you caught the Chicago mayor who had an exchange with a Latino alderman, and she actually, you know, she said, I know you want to pray, but that's just too bad. You know, she actually went out of the way to denigrate the idea of a Christian, you know, having some kind of belief that there were political protections or requirements.
This was lesbian mayor of Chicago, and the country has a bunch of lesbian mayors that are, you know, mocking this person for his, presumably Catholic faith.
Was Catholic.
So I mean, again, and I was reading an article by Christopher A. Farrar. He's the one who was the lawyer for the Thomas More Society, about his father. His father passed away in May from the coronavirus, COVID-19.
Wow.
And he's 95 years old in a retirement home. And he told the story, and he tells the story where his father didn't die from coronavirus. He died of neglect because they were kept from seeing him. And it turns out that he died of dehydration.
Yeah.
It was down as a COVID death, meaning he was neglected. They weren't able to take care of him. Neglect coupled with depression from being abandoned, more or less, or being kept from seeing his family, expedited the man's death. And he died because of that. And there are thousands and tens of thousands of those cases throughout the country, throughout the world.
Well, John Rappaport did a great column on this.
Yes.
He said that the enormous bulge of death in April, which gave the impression that, you know, we were going to have like a million fatalities from coronavirus in the United States, he said that that was exclusively the April bulge was exclusively deaths in retirement homes, which occurred just as you described, from neglect and also from prevalence. De Blasio and Cuomo inserted people who are recovering from respiratory illnesses, which they claimed were COVID, which were probably simply pneumonia. Right. They said, no, you have to take these patients. They made the demand to the retirement homes for poor people. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they inserted them, and then they all just, of course, had just enormous infection rates in these places. And you had this huge bulge, which
It's post-lockdown, not pre-lockdown.
Exactly right. And
the lockdown did it. Yeah.
The bulge existed for like about 4 weeks. If that was actually, you know, endemic to the nature of the coronavirus, it would have continued in its trajectory. But it immediately went back to the baseline monthly fatality rates of the state of New York and New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And the bulge is just sitting there as a statistical phenomena, which I don't think they can pull off again. I mean, obviously, you know, we can see they're going to try to do the second wave horror porn. It's everywhere here in California. It's all they talk about. But I just don't think they have any low-hanging fruit to slaughter at this point, because the retirement homes are just, they're empty. What are they going to do with them? They've killed everybody. So this will be the second wave of the pandemic will be without a mortality, without a huge body count. It will just be strictly a psychological horror show.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, here we are. And now, Chris, as people are allowed to emerge partially from their lockdown, they're also supposed to celebrate their independence this weekend, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, it's the 4th of July celebrates the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
What are those? Wow, what is that? What a fancy term.
Unless unelected health officials declare a pandemic. No, Thomas Jefferson didn't write that. Yeah. That among these rights are, you know, are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Some people think that it was Thomas Paine that actually penned the Declaration of Independence, because Thomas Jefferson I think it wasn't until the 1820s that it was suggested that Thomas Jefferson wrote it. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute a new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Of course, prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. Boy, we know that. We've suffered a lot.
Yeah.
So, Declaration of Independence, you know, that's kind of thought it was the birth of the country, although there was a 7-year war against the British Empire, independence being achieved in 1783. Then you had the Articles of Confederation up until 1789, because that's when the Constitution was finally ratified. That's really the birth of the country, of the United States of America. And up until then, there are the independent states under the Articles of Confederation. Now, what is, you know, that's America. What was America? How, you know, what did she become? What is she going to be? It's interesting. The Declaration of Independence was signed by as many as 15 Masons of the 56 signers. And the subsequent Constitution had 28 Freemason signers of the 40. So they were majority of those who formed the Union, which I think is telling. And of course, we see symbolic the symbolism of Freemasonry can be seen all throughout the country, particularly in the nation's capital. Some have contributed this to a Masonic conspiracy. Others have said that's more benign, but that's no one can deny the Freemasonic influence in the formation of the country. What would you say is the significance of Freemasonry in the formation and the course of the country?
Well, I mean, in terms of the general question of what is America, what have we been, I would say the best description is that we have been a Masonic deception. And that's the phrase I would use to describe us. In other words, the Masons were always in control. They were able to create an impression of the country for the population that made them believe that there was basically a democracy functioning. But in fact, behind the scenes, they were able to maneuver candidates and laws and money, of course, so that they were in control at the beginning and have stayed in control the entire way. And I would say that when we look at what's going on today with the technological slave state, I mean, this is basically the conclusion or the phase of the Masonic deception that was the United States of America. I think if you look at, you know, I mean, it's not just the Masons who signed the document, but going back to the Boston Tea Party, you know, which was the first, like, pandemic lockdown. I mean, it was the first like pseudo event that was given to the public. I mean, this was, you know, obviously a Masonic project. This was being done just for propaganda, just to set the population up for a war that was going to occur, which would reduce population. And it's my opinion, Jim, that the high points of our history are all Masonic deceptions. And I mean, I'm talking about the Civil War, the First World War, the Second World War, the Vietnam War, the counterculture, and now, you know, just as an example, the pandemic. You know, these things were all done for the purpose of creating more and more control and also reducing population. So I think the real history of the country is a very, very malevolent and almost impossible to even look at kind of thing, because the American people have been so deluded as to what they were experiencing. I mean, with the way that patriotism and the idea of the noble cause, the, you know, the Pax Americana, that we are representing good in the world. You know, I mean, it was just an illusion that people who were very sophisticated at propaganda were giving to us. We bought it. It was pretty much uninterrupted. There were a few wrinkles, you know, along the way, but it wasn't until basically the internet and the independent media that the history started getting challenged. It's really only been in the last, you know, 15 years that enough information is circulating among enough people that they're connecting the dots and starting to realize, wait a second, you know, Wilson and the Federal Reserve were, you know, it was a Masonic operation. This wasn't, you know, democracy, you know, having a bad day. I mean, these things were all planned, they were all designed, and they've led to the moment we are now, where we can't go out of our houses, we can't fly to Europe. We can go to Hawaii for a luau, but first we have to go through 14 days of prison monitored by the National Guard. So we're pretty well locked down inside the country, and we have a food supply that is threatened. So given that this is the same group which conducted the Holodomor in Europe, where they starved, I mean, you know, look at the numbers, 10 million would be a common estimate, maybe more. I think that we're in the process, that is the process we're in the midst of right now. So, you know, this 4th of July, while there still will be abundance for some or most, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers, you know, Uncle Sam costumes, I don't know how people will be celebrating it, but, you know, it would be a good time instead of, you know, participating in what is just our self enslavement and our self propagandizing about what we are as a nation, it would be a really good idea for families, friends, and communities to actually talk about what we need to do to survive the next, you know, 24 months. Because in my opinion, we are on the chopping block. The government is not under any kind of democratic control, which I think should be clear now to everyone, right? When you see the Black Lives Matter thugs, I think that is a fair characterization, on the freeway stopping cars and smashing windows, and there's no police anywhere. You mentioned, you know, a personal anecdote where someone was trapped, called the police department, and they said, well, this event is sanctioned, right? They told this to a woman who was basically terrified that she really didn't have any rights. So this is our new understanding in reality, that the illusion of now be gone. And what we are is basically a collection of people inside a dictatorship that is organizing itself to exterminate us. So this 4th of July, I would suggest heart-to-heart and real serious talks with everyone that, you know, anyone who's listening to our show would find as having any kind of open mind at all to the idea that they're going to be facing a kind of, a kind of crisis that I think is best characterized by what happened to the Ukrainians. So the government is opposed to you. They're going to be trying to get rid of your food. They're going to be coming up with every imaginable thing to weaken you. The food will be toxic that you get from them. I mean, everything will be that they can do to exterminate you will be done, because once the process, you know, is gone this far, they can't really go back. This is not an operation, in my opinion, that is going to be rolled back. I think it can be slowed down. In fact, it can be even defeated if the people are actually focused and can fight in the right way. But they, on their side, I don't think they will just stop for some reason and saying, well, we're going to now, we've achieved enough, we're going to, you know, wait another 20 years. I think that they will, when it is finished, there will be, the population will be dramatically reduced and weakened, and the technology of control will be massively increased.
Yeah. To what extent do you think, I mean, we talk about Freemasonry, and sometimes I think it's when you say that, it adds a degree of mysticism to it, mystifies it, and yeah, many people aren't really understand it. But to what extent is Freemasonry now, you know, obsolete, and now we have an established cryptocracy with the various networks that is the lodge really relevant?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, it has been. If you look at like the secret societies that pop up, like for example, the Bohemian Grove is even a better example. You know, it was very powerful. It organized the atomic bomb, for example. But now it's, I think, more of a dining society. You know, I think Skull and Bones has gone through the same process because they don't really need to maintain these things. The secrecy that these organizations provide is time sensitive, and once they become too visible, then they simply can evaporate from that organization, leave it running as some kind of, you know, Shriners Hospital function, and move on. I think that today the secret societies have coalesced primarily inside the intelligence organizations. Mm-hmm. I think the CIA and FBI are probably where a lot of the real deep operated planning takes place. And you have to remember that Masonry has always had this relationship with Judaism. And in the same way that I would say that most Masons were not inside the Masonic deception, I don't think most Jews were inside the relationship to Freemasonry that basically condoned it. But there was obviously a relationship. I mean, the clearest example of that would be Queen Victoria declaring herself a Hebrew. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what actually is their relationship, you know, the Masonic royalty to Judaism? I don't know. I mean, we'd have to do DNA testing.
No, and also the Rothschild financial domination, the Bank of England.
Exactly.
19th yeah. century. And those, the commingling of blood in the 19th yeah. century that occurred.
Yeah. So, it's hard to know what it is without DNA testing, without actually being able to look inside it to see how the oath taking. But it certainly, I think, has part of its animating force the kind of hatred of Gentiles that existed in the first century. I think that the war between the Jews and the Romans basically set in motion what then became the Knights Templar, which then kind of spawns eventually the Freemasons. And so then you have the whole Converso issue of, well, you know, who is a Gentile, who is a Jew? The people, the groups that are converting from Judaism into Gentilism to Christianity, well, to what extent do they really abandon, you know, their historical grudges and things like this? You know, these are questions which are impossible to answer in a general sense. I know that today what we're facing is a combination of those elements. It's a combination of the elite secret society members with Jewish banking families. I mean, this would be the two groups that are the absolutely most obvious to identify. It's obviously extends into Israel. I mean, it has to. I mean, it created Israel, right? Yeah. So that's basically their construction. It was in back of both sides of the World War II. It, in my opinion, it definitely created the Nazi Party with the understanding that the purpose of Hitler would be to hold the Germans in place while they and not surrender while they were slaughtered, just right down to the last individuals that they could. And of course, it was in back of World War One. I mean, obviously, with the license plate, we've gone through all this so many times. But anyway, so this is you know, the fact is, we really can't get inside the secret society. You know, you look at the Hawaiian governor as an example. Inji, he's an Asian individual. He's clearly an operative of the organization. I mean, his behavior to lock down Hawaii is irrational. It's, you know, it can't be circumstance. I mean, he's obviously an agent. Well, how does he get swept up into this? You know, what about Donald Trump? What is his background? You have the converso. Is Trump a converso? You know, is in his background, is there Jewish? Does he have like this secret identity? DNA testing could reveal this, but I just think it's impossible that all of the elites would have this background. It would just be shocking to me. So what I think is somehow there is some way that they can coalesce. There is some structure of authority, obviously. I have no idea. I mean, we would just be guessing at it.
Well, it's a secret society, and secret society. Exactly. I mean, so that's the whole point. And usually, if you're meeting in secret, you're not, you know, planning to do moral or good things. It's a reason why you're meeting in secret.
We can only approach it analytically, and we're not going to be able to provide proof that will satisfy everyone. But we have to go through the process, Tim, because what else can we do?
You know? Well, I mean, if you talk about a secret society, something like the Open Society Foundation, George Soros' operation, where it's been called the most opaque NGO around, meaning that it doesn't reveal what it's doing. Its finances are occulted. You could also see that with the Clinton Foundation or with the Gates Network, which has coordinated, you know, much of the scamdemic was coordinated through Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and associated organizations, whether it's Gavi or the PO College of London or the dozens of organizations that were funded by Gates that advised the various states to implement lockdowns. And so that's the octopus. So that's Masonic right there. Of course, you know, historians have talked about the British Empire, the largest of the Masonic lodges, how it was used to expand and administer the empire. It's called the occult octopus, and that's kind of what we have today running the world is a sort of occult financial octopus. Henry Mankow, who I think he is Jewish, wrote this. He said, Freemasonry is a church of Satan masquerading as a fraternal, mystical, philanthropic order. It fronts for Illuminati, Masonic, and Kabbalist Jewish central bankers who started the U.S. as a vehicle to advance the New World Order. In the worlds of Masonic Elder Manly P. Hall, we must also perfect the plan of the ages, setting up here the machinery for a world brotherhood of nations and races. The Freemasons provided Americans with ideals, civil liberties, equal opportunity, and no taxation without representation. This is the lie you think you were referring to about the mass of the American people thinking they were free, which still are valid, but they are enticements designed to win power. As you might have noticed, these promises are not intended to be kept. Politicians don't represent us. They are Freemasons, and they represent the goals of Freemasonry, i.e., Kabbalist, Jewish world tyranny. I think we kind of identify those contours today. But even within American history, because we talk about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And the continuity of American government that, that after so many years, after over 200 years, we still have the same constitution. Well, we don't have the same constitution because it's been twisted, distorted, and changed through war, through New Deals, through Great Societies, and these things, legislation that fundamentally changed the meaning of the Constitution, especially the in relation and how we relate to the federal government and how the federal government relates to the states. The best example I can see of this is there was a dispute over Mount Rushmore, and Kristi Noem, is a pretty good governor in South Dakota, came out and she said she's going to defend Mount Rushmore. Okay, great. We've gotten to that point. Of course, Mount Rushmore is a fantastic piece of artwork. It has the face of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt on this mountain. I think it was started in the 20s and was finished in the 30s. And but in the personages of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Teddy Roosevelt, you have very conflicting visions of what the American Republic should be, right? I mean, the Republic that Lincoln imposed with the Civil War wasn't anything like the Thomas Jefferson supported, nor would George Washington support, at least rhetorically. But the Republic of the post-Civil War, Republic of Lincoln and then Roosevelt, was a completely different system that was established in 1789. It had been heavily centralized, largely through war. And not to mention what occurred in the World War. You mentioned the World Wars being Masonic operations. Well, here in the United States, the World Wars, both wars, brought massive expansion of government power, all types of regulation, laws which violated like free speech and free assembly, free association. I think it was Eugene Debs who went to prison. He was given 20 years for quoting the Bill of Rights. And that was perceived as being, I think, espionage, because he was against the conscription for the First World War, that was under that Woodrow Wilson waged. You have all the New Deal legislation, like the Wickard versus Filbor in 1942, which pretty much expanded the Commerce Clause to the point where the federal government could regulate anything. But yet we're told we're still a system of laws. You have the Revolution of the 1960s. The Civil Rights Revolution, which completely changed, I mean, completely did away any semblance or any vestiges of states' rights under the guise of civil rights and justice. And pretty much the post-Civil Rights Constitution was completely different than the pre-Civil Rights Constitution, all in the name of justice, of course, but it destroyed any division of power, separation of power, particularly in relation to how the federal government relates to the states. And so we haven't had this continuity that we hear Americans boast of. It's been a radical change, all towards centralization. Of course, that takes us back to, of course, the original conspiracy, which would be the conspiracy in Philadelphia, which would be the Constitution itself, where supposedly they met to revise and amend the Articles of Confederation, and lo and behold, the Freemasons, the Masons at the convention gave us a new constitution, which heavily, if it didn't directly centralize power, it created latent power that subsequent presidents would easily, implement through various crises. Good examples, Abraham Lincoln in the Civil War.
Yeah, well said. I mean, so that's what happened, is that the document had exactly the right aspects so that they could centralize power. They knew that this was as far as they could go at that particular time, because the nation was armed and there was a lot of people who were free thinking, and they would have actually rebelled at that point if they had tried to implement, the war on terror with, restrictions and snooping. I mean, the states had power and rights. So that was why the Constitution was crafted like it was. It has led to not just a federal kind of concentration of power, but also a debasement of the citizen, because at the same time they were concentrating power, they were debasing the citizen both intellectually, but also I think just spiritually and psychologically, because with the, like, for example, the war on terror, so much of what is done under the banner is unconstitutional. I mean, for example, like searching everyone that goes on a plane, it can't possibly be constitutional, because when you search 100%, it's unreasonable. Therefore, it's a breach of the Constitution. Yeah. There had to have been some process to permit that, but there wasn't any. I mean, if you look inside the alphabet soup agencies that have been established, they're completely opaque, and yet they have tremendous power. But democracy does not enter into them. That this is not something that the Constitution permitted to occur. But the citizen has been debased spiritually. You know, by that I mean he doesn't think he has any power, because basically he doesn't. So he doesn't resist. He doesn't complain. He just accepts the war on terror, the snooping, all of this stuff as something that the government is doing to keep him safe. And that then has led to our current situation, where now with a pseudo pandemic, they can basically take away all of the constitutional rights.
Well, now it's like biosecurity has replaced national security as the ultimate excuse for tyranny.
And the Constitution is just out the window. The governors, who are not even basically a legislative entity, are creating laws. They just say, "No, this is my mandate," and then everyone inside local government obeys, and the citizen is just driven into the corral. But this was, obviously, it's not in the state constitution.
I think the proof that there is indeed a cryptocracy or a Masonic octopus operating this is the fact that you had such unanimity, not only within the country, but in multiple countries over the lockdown, even though the justification for it, this modeling, was so crude that no one bothered to ask. Even John Rapoport asked that question. When they got this report from out of the UK, who gave us this report? Neil Ferguson. Isn't this guy wrong about everything? Why you think there'd be someone like in the White House or, at 10 Downing Street, perhaps, if they're operating in any good faith or operating like a government as opposed to, foreign agents, which is what the government represents. Now, we're supposed to think it's our government represents us because we vote. We're given the right to walk in and press a button on a black box and think that this tallies the votes and elects the people that support our interests. But of course, it doesn't quite work out that way. We can all vote, but we don't know what goes on inside the occulted Federal Reserve. We don't know what goes on inside the intelligence agencies. There's various black ops that can operate well-funded. We don't know what goes behind the meetings of the legislative assemblies and these things. Governors can meet in secret with their public health advisors to devise plans. I was listening to I think she goes by the name Patriotic Nurse, but she was talking about public health officials, experts. It says they have no understanding of economics. They have no understanding of political philosophy or history or of civics. And these are the last people you want devising public policy. Yet under this pandemic, they were enthroned as sort of this, I guess you could say a technocratic regents or dictators.
And
to this day, Fauci is still mouthing off. Is anyone still listening to him? Contradicting himself,
Well, I think that the clearest example of the Masonic conspiracy, this, whatever you want to call it, was that the lockdown occurred in, basically every country in the world, but in no instance were there media presentations about the trade-off. Because when you lock down the economy, you're going to have a negative result.
Yes.
So there was this elephant in the room, which was the question of, are we going to have 10 times more suffering because of your decision to lock the economy down than we would have had if we just for example, a lockdown like Sweden did, where they just kept the economy going and just tried to protect the old people. Because there was no discussion of that elephant in the room question, this demonstrates clearly that the media is controlled and the politicians are controlled on a vast scale. Mm-hmm. They have slithered in. I mean, go back to Palmerston Zoo in the 19th century, where, he was sending agents into every royal every country in Europe. The same thing was going on here, and I think they've gone. I think that they actually have control of going down into even like local newspapers. They probably have.
It's like the Hounds of the Baskervilles. Is the dog didn't bark? Well, this was the question that was never asked.
This was the question that was never asked, because if it had have been, if they had to actually justify that, they would have had to have set up structures so that we could see, well, you know, what if it goes too far and then our economy falls off a cliff and then we're going to have this whole molodor that where everyone is going to die. We have to make sure we don't cross that threshold so that if we get close to it, we're going to have to end the lockdown.
That was the first question I asked when this started to unfold in March. This is ridiculous. You know, type of collateral damage you can have. Then it started to dawn on me. Oh, wait a second. They want the collateral damage. This is part of the plan. Then you have the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset and all this technocratic scheming with contact tracing and monitoring and apps on the phones and immunity passports and restrictions on travel. This is the austerity that they were trying to impose with Agenda 21 under the guise of sustainability, environmental issues. They got it with the pandemic. With a fake pandemic, which is just as bogus as all the global warming crap you've been hearing the past 20 years. And I have tried to make the point is I see no evidence of this thing even actually existing, other than the claims of from organizations which have proven to be completely unreliable. You know, so where do you go with that?
Yeah, I'm in your camp. I have never seen any evidence that is conclusive that there even is a COVID disease. I mean, obviously the coronavirus is in us in all times and every single person because it's a very common virus. The idea that this novel one can be detected by the PCR, a test.
The moment you look into the testing, you realize, wait a second, this isn't accurate. In fact, there's too much mysticism to this stuff. This isn't science anymore. You know, we're dealing with magicians in white coats, and we're just taking them at face value. And you can't do that because the whole medical scientific establishment is not apolitical. It's anything but. It's been enthroned for political reasons to pursue the interest of this elite, the same elite, which is conspiring to reduce the population and impose this austerity, which I think will include a famine if they don't go unopposed because they're creating the economic conditions for it.
Exactly. And I'll tell you one thing. If I had a chest infection, one thing I wouldn't be doing would be going to a hospital, boy. I mean, I do not like the statistics of entering those death factories. Now, you know, we can't give medical advice. We just aren't qualified for that. We can express our own opinions. And mine is, the Hippocratic Oath is so far breached that the last thing in the world you would want to do is to put yourself in the hands of these people.
Well, even if there was a virus out there, the first thing you wanted people to do the moment the weather became favorable is to go out, get sun, expose yourself to it, natural herd immunity, all these things. So you could cope with this. I mean, it's almost like I was listening to a podcast called Computing Forever. He's a YouTube page. He's still on YouTube. But he's talking about all of a sudden we're being told to accept that we don't have immune systems anymore. That after thousands and thousands of years, we all rely on a shot to survive these things, an injection. Well, that's ridiculous. And then the various things they're proposing are completely counterintuitive, completely contradict any past understandings of public health, even personal health. I mean, going out, getting isolating yourself, staying inside, you know, that's the worst thing you can do.
Of course, and they think these people don't know it. Of course, they are weakening us because they're going to try to flip do this ethnic flip with Black Lives Matter, and they want all of the public to be as weak as possible, both spiritually and physically, so that they can offer the little resistance. And this is, of course, part of hatred against Europeans, right? This was a part of the process to evaporate them. I had a talk with a nurse who left the profession because she said that she felt it was basically, there was something wrong with the whole medical system. She said in the hospital that she worked, every single patient was on drugs. And she just thought that that was, could not be practicing good medicine. Mm-hmm. That the first thing they do when someone comes in is look for how to put them on drugs, give them chemicals. In no case does a patient, receive advice on how to strengthen their immune system. You know, they don't come in and they say, well, you know, you're having a hard time resisting a flu. We don't have anything to offer you except for this. Go and get the toxicity out of your life and get some exercise and build up your immune system and you'll be fine. I mean, that is never given out in a hospital.
Well, that isn't part of the business model, I suppose.
It's not. And also it's not part of the malevolence, because I really do think that hospitals have, I mean, of course they're good ones, but I'm just saying in general, if you look at what was going on inside the New York hospitals, I think you've probably seen videos of like the nurses will come out and give testimony and they say, look, they're just killing people.
Well, the intubation was killing people.
Yeah, the intubation. And also just they would basically keep people who didn't have COVID in areas where there was people who had respiratory problems, and then they would become sick. And then they would just never get out of the hospital. So I saw.
Well, the death rate goes up, and they get more money for it.
Yeah, exactly right. And that whole
thing, CARES Act.
Yeah, it created both a fake number count, because all respiratory illnesses would now be COVID, but it also created an incentive to murder, because you got $40,000 for every dead patient, COVID patient, up from like, I think before that the hospitals were given $9,000. Well, this was at a time when the hospitals were, all their other sources of revenue were taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, basically they were just being told, look, get your body count up as high as you can and you can survive as an entity. I mean, this was a wink and a nod, but of course that's just, was what was going on. So I don't think I'm going to be heading into the hospital. And, oddly enough, Tim, I actually know someone. This is the first person who supposedly has COVID. A friend of mine, 80 years old, and had a temperature and got tested. He'd been actually quite a shelter-in-place individual, but had gone to San Diego, and when he came back, he felt ill and had a temperature. He went in. Sure enough, they said, you have COVID. But he's kind of someone who like does some YouTube activity. He didn't really want to go into the hospital. So he just sheltered in place, and he just tried to work, had rest, got some sun. After 2 days or 3 days, the temperature was gone. And after a week, this is an 80-year-old individual. He was just, up and about. So, and I was, that was kind of interesting to me, because I was wondering, gosh, if he'd gone in, I bet you he would have been a goner.
Yeah, they would have intubated him.
Well, and given him chemicals, weakened his immune system, he would have gotten worse. And then as soon as they could, they would have intubated him, and that would be that. He's out of there,
Yeah, yeah. There was a, reflect on, this past few weeks of sort of this iconoclasm, the statues being torn down, defaced, or they're being removed. Some judges have ordered this removal because they're nuisances, because they may attract public disorder, which I think is a surrender to the forces of social disorder. Governors have refused to enforce law to protect statues. Some areas they are protecting them. Donald Trump did that. He said he's going to vigorously prosecute anyone defacing a federal statue, which I think is a good sign, at least. But whether or not, a society can decide which people to honor, which not to, which statues to take down or not. Obviously, as times change, statues are removed. We saw that in Eastern Europe after 1989. And it isn't necessarily a bad thing to remove a statue. A reevaluation is always in order. Someone who is involved in a revisionist history, I've grimaced at a lot of statues that I'm forced to look at. If I go into the nation's capital, there's a statue annoying monument to FDR. It's in four sections to each, in honor of all of us, four terms, which I vehemently disagree with. I've never liked from the time I started even thinking about things like the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln. I've never liked the Lincoln monument. It's a you know, he's 20 feet tall. He's in a Greek temple. These things, the aesthetics bother me. But nevertheless, I wouldn't support a mob going and destroying it. These, if you're going to remove a statue, it should be done in an orderly fashion, lawful fashion. And giving to the mob is not the way to do it. And certainly that they're not doing it. They're destroying the statues for all the wrong reasons. But there was a piece that David Wemhoff, he's a lawyer writer, who sent me an article. He had a paragraph in this article he sent me. He goes, as the statues of Washington and other American icons fell, as the calls came in to take down Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, one feels mixed emotions. As an American, these things strike at the heart of our identity. But as a Catholic devoted to the truth, as one should be, these things took on a greater significance. The Americans had brutally won their independence with terrorism and conventional military tactics, and they continued the brutality and ethnic cleansing of the Native Indians from the lands that formed the United States of America. After that came the suppression of the Filipino insurgents with all manner of horror, and then as the 20th century matured and grew old, the Americans used total war to annihilate tens of millions of Japanese and Germans. Following that came the legalization and promotion of abortion that has resulted in at least 60 million dead in the USA alone and up to 400 million worldwide due to American leadership. As if this wasn't enough, World War IV, or Global War on Terror, was launched that has destabilized societies throughout the Middle East and Islamic lands while killing hundreds of thousands of more. So in a way, the survivors or victims of all of the horrors that Americans inflicted on the world have to look at what is going on in the USA and feel a sense of vindication.
well said, but the problem is that he doesn't bring up the great question, which is who's running the country, you know, because this is supposed to be the political.
Well, that's an excerpt. The article, he does cover that in his defense.
Okay, I'm sorry, but it does, you know, obviously the question is right there because it's in a supposedly democratic society, you should have a broader perspective than this kind of world dictatorship and also the skullduggery that the U.S. is constantly engaging in. That it's a question that the public is not demanding an answer to. Hopefully it started to change to some extent with 9/11 and, you know, the impossibility of the government's explanation and also the clear-cut meaning of the fact that they had no explanation for the symmetrical freefall collapse of the buildings, because it meant that they had actually orchestrated it. They had to have been somehow, some element of the government, which was basically the controlling element, had to have been involved in it. So that meant that all of us down below, we don't have any political representation. It completely bifurcated the country. And so this is the great, it should create the great question of, who's running this thing? You know, it isn't us. Our democracy is a complete joke. You know, we can't even have an investigation into something as obvious as the planned demolition of these buildings. Then that means we don't have any. We are literally in a dictatorship. It's a dictatorship that doesn't reveal itself and controls us through propaganda, mind control. Now the same dictatorship is telling us to stay locked in place, shelter in place, locked down. And it basically, you know, we have to trust it that it's going to let the economy come back. It's going to let the food return, you know, to its normal flow. Well, I think we'd be really foolish to have that position. I mean, what we know about the bifurcation is that above our bifurcated line is evil. Obviously, it has to be evil, meaning it hates us, meaning that we are at best useless feeders, and at worst, we are hated targets. And so we have to act like that. We have to act like the Ukrainians should have acted, you know, in the 1930s when the Holodomor started. They should not have cooperated in any way, should have organized among themselves and resisted. That's what we got to do. And, you know, 4th of July, Independence Day, let's make it an Independence Day of the enslaved, right? Let's make it our Independence Day. Let's abandon this kind of illusionary patriotism about what a great country you have and start realizing we're not just enslaved, but we're on our way to extinction.
Yeah, I mean, up until now, the historic American nation hasn't really been assaulted head on, you know, by this globalist cabal, Kabbalist cabal. It's been sort of a death by a thousand cuts, gradual taking, you know, gradual subversion. This was done through the universities. Like E. Michael Jones said, he was asked about the defund the police said movement. He said, defund the police? No, you defund the universities. that'd be a great advance forward in this. But basically, you've had this propaganda, misinformation, psychological warfare. Institutionalizing white guilt. So the white majority internalizes the commands of their oppressors. They begin to hate themselves and not the baby boomer generation, their kids and these successive generation. But now what we have now is this slow encroachment, imposition of an anarcho tyranny, with the economic collapse brought about by the. But a lockdown, you have, of course, the continuance of mass immigration. It seems to have accelerated. I guess you got to give credit where credit is due. This is they really pulled a number on us. But it doesn't say it can't be resisted. And at this point, it's. Identifying, acknowledging it, and we were acknowledging that now their revolution is underway, and they're trying to destroy what is good about America, to bring about a real slave state that they envision. That is this new normal, the new abnormal that they've been talking about. You know, the minute they started talking about that, you should have said, whoa, wait a second. I thought this was to flatten the curve.
Exactly. That expression, that should have been your tip. Hey, we're going into the hard edge technologic slave state. That's the new normal.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's going to rely on our consent. And this goes back to the article I read last week, whereas they want to impose such misery, immiserate the public where people beg for the new system. And the people have to realize that. And that's why this, dragging out these lockdowns, these reports of new test results and the spike in tests, all that's BS. If you really want to have your independence, if you really want to have your freedom, you got to fight for it there. And unfortunately, it's going to take, you're gonna have to be uncomfortable. I mean, you're gonna have to confront people. You're gonna have to oppose it. You're gonna have to resist, and sometimes even resist exercises or inflictions of state power because it's illegitimate. These orders are illegitimate. And if everyone does it, it fades away. It's the same way that that if a couple comes out with an AR-15 and there's a mob in front of the house, the mob melts away. You have to oppose this stuff. And you have to, not wear the mask, go to the beach, tell as many people as possible, get it out there.
Organize and get armed. And an armed citizenry is just essential right now. Mm-hmm. Nothing illegal. You don't need to defend yourself, but you have to be able to defend yourself.
Yes.
Because, believe me, they will send wave after wave against us. The poor and manipulated Black Lives Matter group are just being, manipulated like puppets. You could see what, what makes up the protesters intellectually and mm-hmm. spiritually when they did interviews with the people at Chaz, and they were just addled, low IQ drug addicts, And so this. They're very
That's the mob. I mean,
it's a mob, and it's a very stupid and easily to control mob. But unfortunately, it's a really violent mob.
Yeah,
and particularly when it's being told that. I mean, if you looked when I was watching the videos of the protesters who were smashing the cars that they had stopped, you could see that. They felt that this was something that they had the legal right to do.
Yeah.
I mean, they really believed that there would be no police. I mean, obviously. I mean, the idea of like stopping cars on a freeway and then smashing the windows and trying to get the people out, you know, in order to do something like that, you just have to be certain that the police aren't going to come. So they're operating with that auspice, you know, that they are the government. And these people, they hate these people. They've been told that, that it is white supremacy that is their problem. And so they're basically acting out against white supremacy. So they're puppets. And the way to bring about an end to it is just that people have to be armed and defend one another. So that these groups will basically stop the predation, but also at the same time try to engage them, you know, and say, look, you're the ones who's being manipulated. It's not white supremacy. It's Masonic supremacy, and it's over both of us. We need to work together. That's going to be a hard sell to the Black Lives Matter groups, but it's one we have to try to make.
It's a hard sell to the white majority, the whites.
It's too. Very hard, right, exactly, at this point. But let's just hope that we don't have to starve to get people to open their mind that there's malevolence at the top.
Yeah, that's what we have to work for. Towards. Okay, Joe, have a happy fourth then.
Have a happy fourth, brother. So we'll get them next week.
Take it easy.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.